When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
And with us on the line now is Dennis McNally, an author, historian, and music publicist who lives in San Francisco. His latest book, The Last Great Dream, How Bohemians Became Hippies and Created the 60s, is a riveting social history of everything that led up to the 1960s counterculture movement. Few cities represent the counterculture movement of the 60s more than San Francisco. Welcome to the show, Dennis.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It's lovely to have you with us. So this must have been a really fun project, I guess, to put this book together and look back over history.
Yes, it was fun. I had done books on Kerouac and the Grateful Dead and the sort of the deeper background already. And I wasn't even expecting to write this book. And then I was commissioned to do a curated photo show that celebrated the Summer of Love. This was back in 2016. The 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love was coming, and the museums and whatnot of San Francisco were all, you know, excited, as you might imagine. And I started, you know, poking around with these pictures, and then it dawned on me that it really was a book, where all this hippie thing came from. Mostly, in my opinion, because most of the issues, the major issues that the 60s so emphasized about peace and about sexual exploration and psychedelics and all that stuff still exists. It's still part of our lives, even though we don't live in very peaceful times.
Mm. And tell us more about the real significance of San Francisco in this time and how a lot of what we're talking about started there.
The patterns of hippie largely started in San Francisco. They were met with instant receptiveness all over the United States and in Europe, and so it was sort of a movement waiting to happen, as it were. But the thing about San Francisco is there's a number of unique aspects. One is that cities, generally speaking, are created by economic factors. You know, they're places to do business. And San Francisco, as a living social institution, was not created by business people, by people with a plan. It was created by a bunch of crazy people who did not fit into the East Coast of the United States, and or in Chile or in Canton, and gambled. That is to say, gambled their lives on finding gold. And from the very beginning, there was this toleration for the crazy, this looseness about San Francisco, which really has lasted up until the very, very recent present. And even now, it's still, there's a streak of it. And that is toleration for unusual behavior, sexuality, you name it, and San Franciscans probably did it.
And was it the media that came up with the term hippies? I understand the people called themselves freaks. Is that right?
Right. Freaks are kind of an African-American jazz term. And the first people that were hanging out in the Haight-Ashbury did call themselves freaks. When the newspapers really started paying attention, which was you can sort of divide what happened in San Francisco into two. The year 1966, they were under the radar. It was a small neighborhood that nobody paid any attention to, and they experimented with life, with drugs, with love, with everything. And they were doing just fine. And they were doing so well that they decided to throw a party and celebrate. And the party was called the Be-In. And that took place January 14th, 1967. Well, about 50,000 people showed up to the Be-In, which, they had been under the radar all through 66, but no more. When you have that many people come to a party, it gets them. I might add, by the way, that the police presence at the event consisted of two mounted patrolmen. That
what?
Was it. The police, apparently the San Francisco Police Department, even though they, promoted it and had a press conference even, expected nothing and paid no attention. And it worked fine. There was certainly no violence. And as a matter of fact, the field was cleaner when they left it than when they arrived.
Amazing.
Yeah, no, they really worked hard on that. So the fact is, but from then on, everyone wanted to know what was going on. And the media freak has an edge to it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of goody. Hippie sounds so much sweeter. And so the media said, no, these are hippies. And every newspaper in America for the next 3 months was about hippies.
And did they mind being called hippies? Did people want to be a hippie? Now I feel like we look back at it and think, oh yeah, hippies are a great word. You stand for peace and you're relaxed in relationships and the clothes that you wear, and it seems like a nice term. Was it always perceived that way?
That's not a question I really explored, and I'm not sure why. It was one of those things where it was sort of outside their control, certainly, and their immediate world. So they didn't much bother it. And then eventually they, I think, adopted it as very fondly because, it stands for something. And it stands, as you say, for wanting to live a peaceful, productive, not highly materialistic, friendly, anti-racist, peace. And you can't emphasize the word peace too much.
Yeah.
Life. It didn't affect politics. It did affect the American culture. If you eat organic food to this day, you have hippies to thank for. If you do yoga or there's any number of things that it really impacted. I think most of the sexual issues that are currently in the United States, in particular regarding trans people, derive going back to the gay explosion in San Francisco in the 70s. And before that, that image of gentle male hippies wearing necklaces, which would at that point was sort of considered effeminate, and girls wearing pants because the dress got challenged too, and as a result, there was just an exploration, and that has evolved all the way into acknowledging the one million Americans who have challenge their own birth sexuality.
Yeah. And also at the time there was a big poetry renaissance in San Francisco. Was that connected to the hippie movement too?
Absolutely. When you get out on if you look at pictures of the Great Be-In, Grateful Dead and other bands played, but before them, the poets read. There was a direct lineage from beat to hippie. Many of those poets were in the neighborhood and were fascinated with what was going on and were sort of mentors and elders. And really, my research starts the story with a man named Kenneth Rexroth and another man named Robert Duncan, who were two poets who met during World War II, and their energy and their brilliance really developed a very booming San Francisco poetry scene long before Allen Ginsberg got to San Francisco to read Howl, to write and read Howl. So yes, it was them, and it was the local art students who picked up on the message and who sort of decided that they weren't going to live in a conventional fashion, and that the bohemian tradition of art, love, and maybe a little wine will carry you through.
Yeah. And when we talk of hippies and the movement, we're obviously talking about the 60s and going into the 70s as well in some stages. Is there still a movement that exists today? I mean, I feel like it's now, we need it more than ever now. Are there still people in San Francisco or other parts of the world that are very much living this life?
Yes. And again, almost everyone, many, many people that certainly don't think of themselves as hippies, have elements in their life that were changed, that they get, as I say, you know, whether it's organic food or not wearing polyester clothing or whatever. These are influences that really do drive out of the 60s. Is there a movement? Well, as I say, it's one of those things where it's so embedded in the culture now that it's hard to identify it as a separate movement. Mm. But there's certainly the motivation for Black Lives Matter, for so much of what's going on in the United States is really still goes along with 60s ideas.
Yeah. And another big part of the book, towards the end of the book, is the Monterey Pop Festival that introduced Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin to the world. That was a big moment, wasn't it?
Yeah. What happened in San Francisco is that all those values, you know, nonviolence and blah, 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 all those values ended up somehow. And this is one of those, it just happened, and I can't tell you why particularly, but it ended up being immersed, being part of the music of San Francisco. So a long story short, the two guys from LA, actually, Los Angeles, which is a very different ambiance, planned this nonprofit festival to introduce psychedelic music. I mean, it was clearly all about hippies, from San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York and London. And which, funnily enough, is the areas that I studied in preparing. So when I saw that it all comes together in Monterey, there's a sort of a cultural notion that being a hippie meant that you were young and lovely and had flowers in your hair and beads around your neck, and you were very high, listening to great music and being very beatifically peaceful. And for 4 days at Not Monterey, it really was like that. There were so many people without tickets, and it was surrounded. The arena was surrounded with people. And nothing happened. And the result was fantastic music. Most notably, as you say, Janis Joplin introduces herself to the world, and Janis Joplin and Big Brother and the Holding Company. The Airplane, had a tremendous set that introduced them to the world. And of course, at the end, the three great, it wasn't quite the end, but the last three acts were The Who introducing itself to America, really. The Grateful Dead, who had no stage show, so nobody remembers that they played. Although the critics said they played very well, but after The Who, it's a little hard to remember. And then finally, Jimi Hendrix, who of course totally captured the image and the spirit of the weekend. And that's sort of the high point of things, which is why I kind of decided to cheat and write the story to the high point and then stop.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And if you don't mind me asking you, Dennis, would you have considered yourself a hippie at the time?
Well, no, the funny thing is I'm, I'm a kind of a beatnik scholar. I've theorized. I mean, I've spent the last 50 years researching various things, and I finally concluded that because I went to high school at least the last 2 years in the backwoods of Maine, and then and graduated in 1967, then went to college in way upstate New York, almost to Canada, and I figure I missed it all pretty much as a social thing. So I've been studying it ever since.
Do you wish you were around kind of 10 years earlier or something, so you could have been more involved in it? Is it something that you feel like you would have got really into?
Well, I ended up getting into it because after I wrote the Kerouac book, I was invited by Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead to write a book about the Grateful Dead. And I ended up working for them for, 20 years. Grateful Dead held true to the basically anarchist in a very, not violent, but a soft anti-rules social setting. It was a functioning anarchy that was, a brilliant example of what could be if you minimized the rules and maximized the concern for each other. And so as a result, I figured I got my, with a paycheck, I got my taste of hippie life, and enjoyed the heck out of it.
Yeah, great. Well, if listeners want to get a copy of The Last Dream, How Bohemians Became Hippies and Created the 60s, it's available now on our website, tre.radio, in the bookshop section, and it's by Dennis McNally, who we've been chatting with today. Dennis, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.